Today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast is brought to you by Blue Wire Pods. Go check out all the great podcasts here on the Blue Wire Network. If you have not already done so, bluewirepods.com. Go check out Brownstown, the new Cleveland Browns deep dive for 20 seasons. The Cleveland Browns were the worst franchise in the NFL. Botched drafts, terrible performances, inept management. A lot of planets have to align for a team to be that bad for that long. What exactly were the machinations in this factory of sadness? Host Andre Knott takes you inside the unbelievable and often hilarious story of how the Browns stayed bad while a city and fan base loved them anyways. Against that, it's Brownstown on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. You can find my show there and all kinds of other great shows, merch, more information about Blue Wire. But yeah, go check out bluewirepods.com today if you have not already done so. The Chase Thomas Podcast is also brought to you by sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. That is my daily sports newsletter that you can go check out today. Just add your email in there by going to sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Go do that. I was about to say dot chase. What am I doing? But yeah, I write every day. Today I wrote about my NFL week three picks and all that good stuff. The Manning cast, how it's kind of awkward with Monday Night Football and the normal ESPN broadcast. Today, gratitude, all that good stuff coming to you on sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at @chase_thomas. Leave this show a 5-star rating and a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. If you are an Apple Podcast listener, check out chasethomaspodcast.com. All access to all my previous episodes there. Yeah. All right. That's all I've got. Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Thursday evening edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and it is Thursday, so you know that means it is college basketball on this very podcast. So that means young Ken Pom himself, Stats by Will, is here. Will, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Chase?
Not too bad. I've had less of an eventful evening than yourself.
Well, you know, sometimes you gotta go help your sister-in-law drop her car off at the Ford the Ford dealership for an oil change for tomorrow morning. So, you know, you gotta do some good things in this world for other people.
You gotta get that good karma going. You gotta lock in those karma points when you can, right?
Right. You gotta find the positive.
Exactly. You're a nicer soul than myself. I don't know if I would have pulled that one off. I don't know if I would have partook. That might be a fundamental difference. And sorry to future potential sister-in-law. I would absolutely run to a Ford dealership late. That is what I would do. That is exactly something I would do. Will, what's been new? We took a couple weeks off. Anything new in your neck of the woods?
See, I've got more details coming out on it next week. But I've been hard at work on this ME Secret project. Centered around Tennessee basketball. So I'll be saying some more about that next week. But rest assured that I've spent the last 2 to 3 months on and off working on it, and that I am pretty pleased with how it's turned out. It's all done. It just has to be released over the course of October.
Okay. Very exciting. Chris Lofton, a full-on extended series on his impact to Tennessee basketball 10 years ago. I like it.
He gets a big chunk of one of the episodes, certainly.
Okay.
It's not in audio or video form, but I'm calling them episodes just so we can differentiate them. But yeah, more of that coming next week. All I can say is it's a little history series, and I think Tennessee basketball fans will find something to enjoy in it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Especially they'll need it after what may be on the horizon this weekend in the Swamp. We might need something positive, a palate cleanser, if you will. Don't forget, folks, you can follow Will on twitter.com by going to twitter.com/statsbywill and go to statsbywill.com if you've not already. Go ahead and bookmark that site, especially with college basketball season rapidly approaching. Don't forget to also go to chasethomaspodcast.com. Make sure to follow myself at @chase_thomas. Subscribe to the newsletter where I'm writing every single day by going to sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. And then, you know, if you like listening to Will and I talk college basketball once a week on this feed, make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review and email us if you have a college basketball question that you would like us to answer on this very program. Email us at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Again, chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Will, the best remaining college basketball prospects are who in your estimation?
Well, it was very nice of ESPN to release an article on this subject. I was going to say before we went into the little promo, they need to whip out the old Super Sim button from NCAA football for this Saturday night fixture. But on top of remaining college basketball prospects, I think a very obvious one, especially to people in Knoxville, around Knoxville, everywhere in East Tennessee that are listening to this, Cason Wallace from Richardson, Texas, number 9 on this list and number 7 now on the 247 composite, which is about 10 to 15 spots higher than he spent the summer. He really showed out at the Peach Jam over the summer, from what a lot of people said. This is going to be a battle that comes down to Kentucky and Tennessee, a nice little classic recruiting battle that I'm sure will upset nobody in any way, shape, or form on either side. I think UK, to be honest, over these first few months of the NIL, they've been a bit ahead of the curve in the NIL plan and their layout.
What do you mean by that?
It's a team that doesn't... I think from what I've been able to tell, it just seems like they've had it together and they've had these packages ready to go quite a bit more than any other SEC team. I would compare it a bit to what Ohio State football has done with their NIL package, because I know, like, obviously they're the big number one quarterback there, Quinn Ewers, is that right?
Yes.
1.5 million or something like that. But it's not just him. A lot of the players there have, gotten good packages, all legal, of course, under this, because Ohio State was ahead of the curve. And I think Kentucky basketball is sort of following that same path where they're really leaning on NIL. I mean, it helps, obviously, that they are Kentucky. They've always been Kentucky, and they can just kind of sell that to recruits, along with, Calipari's history of getting recruits to the NBA with ease. But now you can say, okay, you can come to Kentucky and do that, but hey, guess what? You'll also get this $400,000 package to come do it too. If I'm a recruit, obviously it's hard to say no to that. So I think Tennessee may have a little bit of catching up there to do. I do think, from what I have heard and read, that Rod Clark, new Tennessee assistant's relationship with Wallace is going to help Tennessee a lot, because he has known Wallace for several years and has been working on this, for a while for Tennessee. I think the longer it goes, the better it probably looks for UT.
Does he fit?
The other three big ones, I'm sorry?
Does he fit? Do you like the fit with Barnes in this group?
Yes.
Okay.
I think Wallace would be good here. Anytime you can get number 7 in the class.
That's true. Don't overthink it. Just accept it and figure it out later.
Yeah. Now, if it were a deal where he couldn't shoot, then I would say, well, let's think about this a little bit. But Wallace can shoot pretty well.
Well, hold on. I think that's more of a natural fit for the Rick Barnes offense. Can he make it a little bit clunkier in the half court? Then let's bring him in.
Yeah, if he can make 13 footers, specifically possible. 17, but 13, yes. Mm-hmm. The other three big ones that are left, Nick Smith, Jordan Walsh, Jaden Bradley. Nick Smith seems pretty likely to head to Arkansas, which isn't a surprise. He's from Little Rock. Musk is obviously killing it there. Very funny to me that one of the likely lottery picks in 2023 is just named Nick Smith. Very normal. Very, very average. Mm-hmm. And then Jordan Walsh, I think that's going to be kind of a surprise if he says no to Texas. Like, I know Kansas is in on that, but he's a Texas guy. Beard has been in on that for a really long time. It would be a little strange if he didn't pick Texas. And then Jaden Bradley is pretty much down to Arizona and Alabama. He's one of the last top 10 guys available. Please go to Arizona. Please do not go to Alabama. Not biased at all here. Please go to Arizona.
No, we want it. We're not a biased group of guys in this podcast. Will, but it would be in the best interest of him. We're looking out for his, like, Tommy Lloyd. I mean, just look at what he's done in Gonzaga. Like, that's where you want to go. Nate Oates, he might be a flash in the pan. Tommy Lloyd, that's forever.
Yeah, Alabama, you get overshadowed by the football team. Arizona,
right.
I'm pretty sure they just lost to an FCS school in football. No,
they
problem
did.
Right
Northern
there.
Arizona. But to
and
be fair.
Anytime you can hire your defensive coordinator, obviously that's what you do. But that's another sport.
An all-time great coaching name, though. Jed Fish. Jed Fish is a delightful
yes,
name.
But not even normal fish. F-I-S-C-H.
Mm-hmm. Jeb Fish. What a name. What a name. And it turns out just becoming friends with Teddy Bruschi and getting the ex-athletes excited about Arizona football again does not solve all of your problems. I don't know. Them Arizona is like one of the low-key, this is the first of maybe several college football tangents, 20-second tangents, but Arizona football is the worst Power 5 job that no one considers the worst Power 5 job. Like, if you look through the history of Arizona football, it's unbelievable how bad they've been forever. Like, this is, it's not, like, Trung Candidate might be the best Arizona football player for the last 25 years. like, it's just bad. Like, they've been bad forever. Like, Pat Toomey was 40 years ago, basically, and they're just,
Who's the quarterback that kept putting up, like, 570 yards in games they lost by 14 points? This was, like, a decade ago. Who is, that is, like, my main reference point, pre-Rich Rodriguez.
Was that not Rich Rod?
They had a quarterback. Sorry?
Was that not Rich Rod?
No, this was pre-Rich Rod. This was the latter days of Mike Stoops.
Okay, now you're putting me on the spot. Yeah. I got to think about this. This is part of... Yeah, it wasn't Nick Foles. I'm trying
Friday
to...
Friday nights and always lose them 52 to 42.
I know who you're talking about. I can see him. What is his name? This is gonna drive me nuts. This is my fault. I did this. What is his name? Did you find him?
I have scanned Wikipedia. All right, this is like late 2000s, early 2010s. Shoot, I'm an. It was Nick Foles.
Was it Nick Foles?
It was Nick Foles. He went
okay.
Because they played some specific game, maybe it was against Oregon, where it was just up and down the whole game. And I was like, I really wish this guy had a functional defense just once.
There you go. There you go. Well, it worked out for him. He won a Super Bowl later, which naturally brings us back to college basketball. But anyway, Arizona, not a football school, more of a basketball school.
No. Basketball school coming to Tennessee this winter, actually.
They are. They're doing the Kansas tour. And that's something else I wanted to mention to you. Like, Kansas is not winning any of these battles.
No. Which is, it's interesting. It's hard to figure out what to blame that on.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's the, you know, kind of the NCAA issues they seem to be having, or, you know, like, how much longer is Belstoff going to kick it around there, or...
But they're not in worse shape than Arizona, right? Like, we talk about NCAA issues, and then Arizona's just like, we're fine. Tommy Lloyd's in here. We're going to be fine. Things are great.
Right. I do think it really hurts them that Chris Beard went to Texas because it would have been one thing if it was just like Chris Beard did his thing at Texas Tech forever. It's like, all right, nobody is exactly falling over themselves to live in Lubbock, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But now when it's like, you know, the University of Texas, it's getting a little bit harder to win those recruiting battles.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of recruiting battles too, Kentucky and Duke. It seems like they're going to be fine. We mentioned Kentucky a little bit. We haven't talked about Duke getting another big one. Looks like John Shire is going to keep this thing rolling based on early returns, right?
Yeah. I wish I could be surprised that the two best programs of the last 25 years are the top two classes. It's a very college football of college basketball for once.
Mm.
I do think we are going to look back on the strangest season of all time and treasure it. Because neither Kentucky nor Duke were in the NCAA tournament for what will probably be the final time in our lifetimes. But I have two takes, one for each team, obviously. You would imagine this set Shire up really well for year one. I mean, every recruit that's committed to Duke knows the deal. They know the setup. They're not really getting hit with the Coach K's retiring surprise. So, I mean, he's going to enter this first season with what's going to end up either being number one or number two class in the nation, plus probably a couple of starters returning. I'm assuming Wendell Moore and Roach stay for their senior / junior years. All he really has to do, I mean, he's getting the keys to a Ferrari here. I mean, that's at worst a top 10 team, night one next season. All you got to do is not demolish it in the driveway. Just don't back through the garage door.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky's a little more interesting because something I don't feel like we have really talked about, not just us, but sort of basketball media as a whole. At the end of the season, you know, the 2022-23 season that we're referring to, Coach Cal is going to be 64 years old. He's never really struck me as a Boeheim coach till you die type. So this sort of feels like one of his last big swings at the fences. It's been a little bit since Kentucky has had the chance to head into a season where you say, hey, that's a team with three or more potential lottery picks on the roster. It's strange to say that because, you know, we would have just sort of assumed that in years past, but the last four seasons of results have, you know, shown otherwise. You know, they did recharge the staff this offseason, but how many more big runs is Cal willing to make? And you know, again, not something many people have really talked about. Cal has an option in his contract where he can back out in a year starting in 2025 and basically become Kentucky's Barry Alvarez. Not necessarily the athletic director at the moment, but sort of, you know, the assistant to the regional manager type of thing. That's to me, that's a little more interesting than the Duke case, because with Duke, it's like, all right, new guy, new energetic young coach. People want to come play for them again. Maybe they'll have a new system. It's Duke, et cetera. Kentucky, now this is really intriguing. So I want to see, one, if they can hold it together, two, if they can add anything else, and three, what that all looks like once next season starts.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think this is something that college basketball figureheads want? Do you think this is something that deep down they do still want the Kansases, the Dukes, the Kentuckys to be the cream of the crop and continue?
100,000%.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So they don't want what happened last year.
Because think about it this way. Those teams drive ratings like nothing else. They have clicks like nothing else. People, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I clicked on Kentucky basketball imploding articles last season.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get enough of it. So,
but we're maybe not the right people, right? Like, I'm curious, like, in your friend circles, in your group of friends, your sports friends, like, do they find themselves more invested in the tournament if Duke and Kentucky are good? Like, were they less intrigued by, like, is March Madness not bigger than these Blue Bloods now, where it's just like, it doesn't matter if they're there or not, we're all going to be obsessed with it and do our brackets, and we're not going to feel in any type of way about them not being good? And also, just like, you know what I like doing? I like bouncing around during the college basketball season. I mean, I watch every Tennessee game, but like, I wanna watch Mizzou one night. I wanna watch FSU one night. I wanna watch, especially like with prospects, is I wanna get a feel for what Scotty Barnes is, and I wanna see like insert Providence Friars, whatever. Like, I like bouncing around. I just don't know if that's what the majority of fans like, and if they do feel more comfortable and more likely to watch if it's Kentucky and Duke, just because they're Kentucky and Duke.
I would be really curious to hear, because like you and I, we live in Knoxville, are sort of in the center of this, with Tennessee's main basketball rival being Kentucky and Duke not really being very far away. I would be curious to hear, like, if you lived, like, if you're a Michigan State fan or something, or if you're like an Iowa fan, what are your thoughts on March Madness sans Duke and Kentucky? Because I feel like for them, it's probably, you know, like, I kind of, maybe they don't miss it, but they're like, you know, it was a little more interesting when we could, you know, maybe see our teams eventually be able to play those teams. Because like Michigan State would never trade the experience of beating that Zion Duke team for anything.
I agree.
So I wonder if it's, because like for me personally, it was like, not, it was a nice relief to see something different. But I think for the average, you know, maybe not a serious college basketball viewer, and I'm not saying Michigan State or Iowa fans aren't serious, they very much are. But like for, you know, average Joe who sort of like kind of doesn't care much about it until after the Super Bowl and then gets invested for March Madness, I wonder if like they kind of wanted to see Kentucky get in or Duke get in, or, you know, toss it back a few years when UConn was always sort of on the cusp of maybe or maybe not getting in.
Yeah. I just don't extrapolate like that. I notice that's a common media trope of just being like, oh, we want, and I'm like, no, don't use the collective we. The collective we drives me nuts. It's like, yeah. No, I'm good, actually. My perspective or what I'm into is just different. Like, it's not what I... Just talk about what you're into. Don't do the... This is why they have these ratings. Yeah. It's because you just continued this narrative that we're all looking for these teams. But if you're just looking at it, like you said, if we can do some deep dives into these other fan bases, like, do y'all actually care? Does it actually affect your enjoyment and affect your stuff rather than us just assuming that's the case?
Yes.
Which naturally, Will, brings us to the Washington State Cougs. We did a deep dive a few weeks back on their Moneyball approach by Coach Smith up there in Pullman. Two different situations going on. I don't know if you keep up with Coug Center, a very good Washington State blog on SB Nation. A lot of good dudes over there, a couple of them on this very program. They're good. The basketball program, I would say, is rising, and the football program could not... It could not be cratering anymore. And I'm not going to lie. I'm not shedding a tear for Nick Rolovich falling apart.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting, the epic college football Twitter kind of slowly do the Homer Simpson back into the bushes for Nick Rolovich over the last 3 years.
That man left Hawaii.
Is their hero now being the Hawaii coach?
Man, he had the perfect gig. I don't know why any coach who... Like, unless you're certain you can win at a Power 5 school and you can build the kind of program and you have the kind of resources to actually compete for a title, I'm staying in Hawaii. I'm staying at Boise. Staying at these small, like, what? No, I'm doing, like, he's universally liked. He's just fun offenses, the run and shoot style. Then he goes to Coug Country and then he doesn't get the jab and says some dumb stuff. And, yeah, no, it's bad now. Now he can't get the Hawaii's not playing well at all either with Todd Graham, so maybe he can get that job back. But I don't know. June Jones had it right where he was like, yeah, I'm good. I did the whole Falcons thing. I did high power football. No, I'm just going to go hang out in Hawaii and create Colt Brennan's and Timmy Chang's and just have a lot of fun in, let me check my notes here, Hawaii.
Todd Graham is their head coach?
He is their head coach, yeah.
I wish I could have seen that process.
Yeah, no, okay. I got you.
Washington State basketball. it's pretty obviously deserved, right? Like that. So Kyle Smith,
yeah, we should mention he got an extension. That was where all this was going. Is he got an extension through, I believe, 2026, 2027, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, they've overachieved the last couple of years. And, I mean, for obviously, like, overachieving means different things at different schools.
Mm-hmm.
So for Washington State, I mean, like, they went 14-13 this past season and have gone 500 or better two straight seasons. They hadn't gone 500 or better two seasons in a row since 2011, 2012. So, like, that's genuinely a good, considerable achievement for what they are. And, I mean, I think he needs to get, like, an NCAA tournament, but in the next couple of years. But if he does, anything beyond that is kind of great. I mean, they've won 3 NCAA tournament games since World War II. That's not like a program with a overwhelming amount of historical success. If you make a tournament, like, that's a pretty big deal there.
Yeah.
Because right? It's not like you're...
And they're a fun watch, by the way. They're a fun watch. I watched several Cougs games. Guess what? Do you know what I didn't love watching last year? Kentucky basketball. Sometimes you want to watch something different, and the Cougs are different.
Yes, I like them. That's a fun little team. And I think it kind of seems like there's a lot of online energy and maybe offline too for really rooting for them to make this year's NCAA tournament. And I'm in on that. I would love to see it happen.
I agree. Do you know where there's also a lot of online energy? The University of Phoenix.
That's true.
A lot of online energy.
Shout out to the University of Phoenix. I would like to shout out... Grand Canyon University too. Strangest university.
I don't want to get in trouble for that one. I'm sure that we have some Grand Canyon listeners, but that like blew up. They have beat writers and it's a for-profit college.
Yeah, it just kind of goes
we just moved on. Do we just not care about that thing, like, just blowing up the way it has? I don't understand. Are they accredited? Like, whatever, that's a different podcast for a different day.
Yeah, they have to.
Okay.
So the One Kyle Smith thing I have is, if you have not gone to his Wikipedia page, I strongly suggest doing so, because I think years ago, Roger Sherman, I think then at SB Nation, did a list of the worst Wikipedia photos, and Kyle Smith has to be pretty high on that list. I don't know why it's his photo. It's this very grainy zoom in of his face, like clearly mid sentence, and he looks exhausted. Like he looks like he wants to sleep so bad. And not only that, it's a 9-year-old photo.
Mm.
So why is this his Wikipedia photo?
What is the worst photo you ever taken? What was the worst photo you ever took?
I think a strong contender, and I can dig this up, is a picture I took while sunburned with like Disney characters at a Disney resort when I was 16 or 17.
Oh.
I was badly sunburned, had the sunglasses tan too, and I was like trying to fit in a picture with Goofy and Mickey, and it looks very bad.
Interesting. Have I told you I've never been to Disney World?
You have not.
I have never been, but my parents took me on multiple occasions to SeaWorld. It's so strange that I've been to SeaWorld so many times and I've not been to Disney World. It's never on the agenda. Never done it. Now I'm too old, and Sports Renaissance Women are probably going to wait until the whole kid thing comes up to get back over there. But yeah, never made the trip. But I did have a really bad school photo. I think when I was first grade, maybe kindergarten. No, I think it was first grade, first or second, where I opened my mouth and like acted like I was screaming in the class photo. And let me tell you, coming home to a Marine father, when those pictures came back, that was not a fun time in the Thomas household.
Oh.
Will, that was not a, oh, no. they didn't love the bit. Parents did not love the bit. So, you know, mistakes were made, but sometimes that is it happens.
Now it's like Urban Meyer, where your parents can display 500 photos in their home, right?
Oh, that is one of the weirder things I've ever seen. Like, for folks that don't know, just go look on twitter.com and look at the Urban Meyer photos in his den, where it's just like, and I think Shelley said that like Urban just loved, this was his idea to just put like all of the family photos on this one coffee table, and it's just the memes that followed and people just be like walking around Urban's living room trying not to knock, like it's incredible. It's one of the worst ideas I've ever seen. I can't believe it's a real thing. But then again, I'm like, oh, an elite college coach not having any idea for interior design, that checks out. Like, I'm sure Saban, I mean, yeah, it has some weird stuff in his house too, where it's like, oh yeah, I've spent all of my brain becoming an all-time great coach. I have no idea what I'm doing with this.
It's physically upsetting to look at.
it's not great. It's not great. And to put a bow on that, go check out Kyle Smith's Wikipedia photo. I just like that's funny. Men's sleeper teams. ESPN also did this. I believe it was Friend of the Pod, Jeff Brazello, who did this one as well. Great writer for them. Who do you agree with on this list? Who stands out the most? Do you have the top sleeper teams heading into 2021, 2022?
I got a loose collection of yes and no's here. There are some that was just kind of ambivalent of, you know, like, yeah, fine, whatever, I get it. But there are three that I really did like that I was glad Coach has pointed out. UCF from the American Conference, great sleeper pick, a team I personally expect to make the NCAA tournament. That's a good nucleus, a lot of returning quality talent, Darius Perry chief among them, the Louisville transfer. And I kind of think Johnny Dawkins has become a little underrated as a head coach, because I know like his whole Stanford run was not great, obviously, but I feel like he's done some underrated work at UCF, and not like a school with a lot of basketball winning history either. I mean, the tournament they went to in 2019, that was their first in 14 years. So I know they had Taco on the roster, but, and obviously Johnny's son, but this roster really should make the tournament again for them. I don't know. I just like it. I like him. Seems like a fine guy. Seems like a solid program is building there. The two others that I liked quite a bit and would endorse, Seton Hall, and as much as I regret to say this, Indiana. I didn't really know Seton Hall was a sleeper team because I thought everyone was kind of in agreement that they were going to be somewhere like a 7-10 seed come March. But I
think Seton Hall is just going to be perpetual a underdog team because Kevin Willard's squads just feel like underdogs. Like they could just make a Final Four run in the following year. It's like, I don't know, that scrappy Seton Hall team, they might show something this year in East Orange.
Yeah, I think they're probably the fourth best Big East team, which doesn't sound that impressive, but to me, that's like, okay, end of year, that's probably a team that's like an 8 or a 9 seed. You're like, yeah, that's a stingy team to play. You don't really love drawing them on your schedule. Indiana is a curiosity that I, again, hate myself for saying this, but do endorse as a sleeper pick, at least in the sense that I think they're making the NCAA tournament, and I think that's like a 5-8 seed, somewhere in that range. You got to keep expectations for Mike Woodson pretty realistic. It's not like he's instantly going to be, you know, genius coach that erases all of the supposed bad Archie did. But one, I think they're going to have a functional offense, which is more than Archie had at any point in his time there. And two, it's a good roster. They made a really sneaky good add in the offseason with Parker Stewart from Tennessee Martin. Obviously, he transferred from Tennessee Martin with his father. The head coach passed away. But I think he was doing a fantastic job on that roster. It wasn't like they had a lot of talent surrounding him either. And, I mean, he cut it up being a solid start by year's end for them. Two more that are not mentioned because they're mid-major conferences. But these are two teams I'm very in on. St. Bonaventure from the A-10, St. Mary's from West Coast Conference. The Bonnies seem to be getting some pretty consistent low-end top 25 love, which is going to look ridiculous to people who don't know much about them, but it makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, they return 87% of minutes and scoring back from a 9 seed, Atlantic 10 champion. Starting lineup is entirely made of seniors, by the way. It's not sexy, but this is basically the average makeup of your every single year. How is this team I have never watched play basketball a 5 seed team? That's my pick. And then St. Mary's, a little different because I don't know how much you got to watch them last year, but they weren't very good. It was one of their worst seasons in a little while. They weren't as experienced as usual, not much in the way of upperclassmen talent. And they predictably struggled with that in the most abnormal basketball season ever played. But I like them for two reasons. One being Randy Bennett, one of the greatest offensive minds in America. I mean, you can kind of follow it stats-wise and see, you know, consistently for the last decade, St. Mary's has always ended up in the top 15 in effective field goal percentage on offense, because they just always generate good shots. And most importantly, though, they return every single minute played from their 2020-21 roster, which is very unusual. That's a team that feels very directly headed for like an 8-9 game. One of those that starts at 9:57 Eastern on that first Thursday. That's where I'm thinking I'm going to see St. Mary's.
Mm. I like it. Will Memphis figure it out offensively? There was a really good piece I read a few days ago on Memphis, and like it was interesting to get. I love when they get the anonymous rival coaches involved in these stories of like, because I think I go back and forth on anonymous coaches speaking and a lot of anonymous GM sources, that sort of thing. But like something that is always the case is that they're gonna be more open. They're gonna say some things that are interesting, and it just inspires you to go do some digging. You don't realize that Memphis just being so bad offensively and being so elite defensively. And like one of the things that rival coaches are impressed by Penny is that he gets them to buy in defensively every year. And it feels like Penny's been more successful at Memphis than he's actually been to this point, that he actually may have some heat on him, especially with Duran and Bates and just this loaded class and this loaded team, really, that the expectations are sky high. But like, there are questions of like, is this offense going to be good enough to match those expectations? Because most teams and most coaches think that they're going to be a pain in the butt defensively on a random Wednesday night, but are they going to be able to score enough? Is the offense going to be efficient enough to warrant that top 5, top 10 label? What do you think when you think about Memphis right now?
It's a tricky case. Because it's not impossible for them to be good as an offense. I think teams with as much talent as they're going to have a pretty high floor offensively. What maybe not as much in the shooting side, but definitely, you know, offensive rebounding, turnover prevention, and obviously getting to the free throw line. Even Tennessee, this past year's Tennessee team, which offered some truly wretched offensive basketball on many nights, put up 93, 89, 82, and 80 in conference play without much of a sweat. But I've still got some serious concerns on two things. That the roster itself does not contain a lot of shooting. It's got some quality shooting even, but it doesn't contain it's not a roster where every single player on it has the ability to shoot. And it's not really even a roster where you say, okay, this is an 8-man rotation and only two guys can't shoot. It's like three, maybe even four are going to struggle. And with that in mind, I get worried that Penny is going to spend more than my personal preferred amount of time putting multiple guys who can't shoot on the court together. There's not really a defense for doing that in modern college basketball unless you're historically efficient on twos. And let me check, Memphis basketball, not really efficient on twos the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for that to work, it's going to have to be, he's going to have to create some shooter heavy lineups, limit how much they're going with double big lineups. And if they're able to do that, I could definitely see a scenario where that ends up being like top 15 offense in America, you know, schedule adjusted, of course.
Interesting.
But right now I have to admit, I am a little cautious. I think the defense night one could be the very best in college basketball. And probably will be. I don't see a roster, to be honest, right now. All that would really compare. Michigan might be closest. But I think that's like night one best defense in college basketball. You're going to have a heck of a time scoring on it. But whether the offense keeps up is another question. I would say if I had to take a stab at it right now, that's probably an offense that finishes in like the low 20s, high 30s at the end of the year, which is going to feel a little disappointing when you have the talent they have. But if you have a defense as good as theirs, that's still a top 10 team, possibly even top 5.
Expectations are high. And when is the Nashville game with Memphis?
I think December 18th. Somewhere.
Are you going to go?
I would like to. It's going to be tough schedule and travel-wise, but I would like to. Because, I mean, that is literally the biggest Tennessee-Memphis game since the biggest Tennessee-Memphis game 13 years ago.
I want to go. That would be fun. I think it would be pretty lit.
That's a good mix of fans, too.
Exactly. Last thing we'll wrap up here, Will. USC got a 5-star, still doing stuff. Mr. Enfield making moves to replace Evan Mobley, going top 3 in the draft to the Cavs. What do you think, Vincent? All right, let me see if I can do this. Uchukwu? Do we know how to pronounce it? Do you know how to pronounce it?
Not touching it. I would call him one of two things, Big Vince or Large Vincent.
Large Vincent, okay. I still call Tua's Large brother Vincent Little Tua. What? There's no way I'm going to be able to. I can't do it.
From what I have read, this is a very, very raw talent. Probably going to be a lot better, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road than he is going to be at 19 in college. But, you know, it's kind of like they're trying to replace Mobley with semi-budget Mobley. He has a real three-point shot, seems like a very good defender, loses focus offensively at times. The most likely outcome for a guy like him is just that, like, he's a pretty good starter in college, which is fine. I mean, a pretty good starter will make you a better team overall. And if you make it to March, having a 7-footer that can shoot threes is a pretty nice X factor to be able to pull out of your bag. So I think he's a bit more of a curiosity than a known commodity right now, where he's had a bit of a late rise and he still has not quite developed into, you know, what people are think he will be one day, but he'll get some positive contributions for USC. And I mean, Enfield has kind of done a better job than people realize, I would say.
True or false, in 2000 Andy Enfield invested in and was hired as a vice president of finance at Track Manager, a healthcare software startup.
That sounds right.
That's right.
That's right. Like Dabo Swinney, real estate agent at one point. That's right.
He's just like insanely bright. Like he was the valedictorian of his high school in Pennsylvania, and obviously had a great career at getting into Johns Hopkins and graduating from there, and he got a NCAA postgraduate scholarship. And no, Andy Enfield, smart dude, also does not look 52 whatsoever. Do you know what it is? It's because he was a Leonard Hamilton assistant at Florida State for 5 years. And Leonard Hamilton, as we know in this podcast, that man does not age. There's something in the water in Tallahassee.
Yeah. The fountain of youth for old Andy Enfield.
I like
52.
It.
52. That is kind of crazy. I guess, you know, you think of these coaches as young, but I guess 44, he was 44 when Dunk City happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like not necessarily as young as I would have thought I remembered.
Well, he's aging into Billy Donovan. Like he's just like a couple years away from looking exactly like Billy Donovan to me. Billy Donovan, 56, man. Aging pretty well.
Yeah, 56?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. So that means, yeah, so he would have been, you know, 31, 32 when he started at Florida.
Yeah, look at those pictures and you're like, oh, wow, Billy Donovan, young Billy Donovan. A different dude. Now he's the Silver Fox in Chicago. Will, we can check you out at statsbywill.com. We can follow you on Twitter at statsbywill. Go do that if you've not already. Again, twitter.com/statsbywill. Look out for his new content, his new episodes coming out. I'm assuming on statsbywill.com, correct?
Yeah, statsbywill.com. I don't know why I'm being so secretive about it, but I guess I like hyping things up that probably don't deserve the hype. But keep your schedules open for October 4th. That's when I'll be beginning to release my work.
There you go.
And then a Tennessee basketball fan, keep a lookout towards the end of October for the Tennessee season preview I do every year.
Excited for that. Things are great. Tennessee basketball, efficient, threes. It's going to be great. No question. I'm ready to get hurt again. Don't forget, folks, check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com. Subscribe on Apple or Spotify wherever you get your podcast. But if you are an Apple Podcast listener, it helps us if you leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. It would be great. SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Type in your email. And then, of course, just email us if you have any college basketball questions you would like to answer on next week's show, ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Will, I will talk to you next week.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
All right, that'll do it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thanks again to Stats by Will for coming on the show. Don't forget to go check him out at statsbywill.com. Follow him on Twitter at statsbywill. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, BlueWirePods.com to get access to all of our awesome shows across this great network. Make sure, if you are an Apple Podcast listener and you like today's show, leave us a 5-star rating, interview, tell a friend, all the good stuff. SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. I will talk to you guys tomorrow. Thank you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.